You know, I am not one to panic easily.
You? How do you even say that? I'm busting up laughing.
There was a little bit of a... The Dow took another pooper today.
Oh my goodness.
The S&P 500, the stock market, and it was an end-of-day sort of swoon.
Right, it was off to a great start. I'm like, oh, good.
Yeah.
Things are great.
And our chief financial analyst right here, Susan Schmidt from Westwood Financial in Dallas, although by way of Chicago, is...
Right, and currently in New York.
Where they seem to understand the money. What, last week you're like, oh, don't worry about it. It's all good, man.
Mm-hmm.
Chill out. It's cool.
Everything's fine.
Let me start out with the good news. So I'm at a conference in New York and I just met with 15 different management teams from different large companies and talked to the CEOs and the CFOs and the COOs, who are the guys in charge of operations, and asked them about their businesses and what they see and what's going on. And on the business level, everyone thinks things are basically okay. And everyone at the conference is aware of what's happening in the market and looking at each other and kind of scratching their heads. The management teams are having a really hard time understanding why there's this extreme reaction, because to them, it doesn't feel, their businesses feel okay. And so I really think today we're seeing that emotional, again, this is just going to be an emotional week until oil settles out. You're going to see a lot of volatility. So oil took another step down. We saw that people are not using as much oil as we wanted. So supply built up again, and that caused a negative reaction. And that really was the little tinder that set off this big spark that turned into a flame today that got the Dow and the S&P down so much.
Okay. Now, you see, the thing that always gets me mad, you know, I like capitalism. I'm like Bernie Sanders. I'm for it. I'm not quite Trumpian about it, but I like it. And the one thing that always kind of gets me about the capital markets in America is that there is their love affair with high oil prices, and they love it, and they think it's all great because the stocks do well when the prices are high, but from a consumer standpoint, this is where I'm going to get a little Bernie Sanders mm-hmm. on your keister. From a consumer side, it would seem to me that it would be good. You know, transportation costs go down. People would be moving more. The potential to buy more stuff in a broader sense because they're not spending as much money on gasoline. I mean, I don't know why that isn't balanced out in at least on the way the Dow looks at this.
Well, that's very true. And we're not really seeing that yet in consumer spend. So the thought has been that generally there's about a 12-month delay between the drop in the price of oil and how that translates into lower gas prices before the consumer really feels confident enough to deal with that and say, all right, I feel good enough to go out and spend a little bit. So right now, we haven't seen the consumer pick up that much, and you didn't see it happen over the holidays, and that's where everyone's focused on the bricks and mortar spend. Are consumers out there? Are they in the malls? Are they shopping? What's going on? But we did see online spend, and we've seen services be in demand. So people aren't buying things, but they are buying experiences. And so we're seeing the outside of cars. People have been buying cars. But you know, we're buying the intangibles. People are going to the movies, they're going to the theater, they're going out to dinner, but they're not necessarily picking up that, third Christmas sweater. So we're having a hard time figuring out where that spend is going. The good thing is people are saving more, so they're de-levering, which means they're in a healthier financial position, and we are still seeing jobs increase. So we've got some positives out there that are indicators that the world is not falling apart. So, Ro, I know you like to jump to that conclusion, but you don't have to today.
Yes. No.
And so it's not falling apart yet. There's still some positives. It's just a mixed bag.
What about this volatility index that we just saw today climbed 11%? And it seems like a lot of people are nervous out there, Susan. I mean, they're just
A lot of people are nervous, and a lot of people have exposure. So a lot of people went through year-end. You got a lot of hedge funds now that, remember, people play both long and short. So when we talk about the market, generally for, the individual investor is going long the market. They're buying shares. But the professional investor, we talk about high-frequency traders. There's a larger amount of activity in the market that's driven by high-frequency traders who are just trading on, a penny move in a stock price. And then we're also talking about guys who play the market both long and short. So they're betting that shares go down. And we're seeing a lot of activity from those elements in the market so far this week. And I think that's part of the pressure, too. So that's what causes that volatility. We've talked about this. Volatility is going to go up, but that's what causes that volatility to spike up.
Isn't there some weird way that hedge funds specifically are taxed or treated by the tax laws that requires movement at the very end of the year and the beginning of the following year? Isn't that sort of a...
Right, yes. So now there's a 30-day rule. So occasionally for tax laws, you can, let's say you have a tax loss and you want to take advantage of it so that you can include it in your taxes. You have a loss that you expect, the shares are trading at a lower price than you bought them at, and you can recognize that loss and take it as a loss against your gains in your taxes. And unfortunately, that causes a lot of extra trading around year end. It's a 30-day rule, so you can't own it again for 30 days, and then you can buy it back. So a lot of people do that right around December 1st and then into December, and then they wait, and then in January you got a lot of noise because there's that activity of people buying their things back.
Yeah, but that would generally make things go up, buying them back, and that doesn't seem to
work. Well, it would, but sometimes people then are saying, oh, you know what, I shorted it, so I'm betting that it's going down. I took myself out of the market because I didn't want any risk going into year end. And now I'm going to come back in and I'm going to bet on the downside again.
Okay. Oh.
Susie, they're saying that all...
See, that's the negative.
Explain this to me, because they're saying that all three of the U.S. averages closed more than 10% below their 52-week highs. And they're calling that correction territory. And so is that something that we should just be okay with? Like maybe a little correction in this market is okay? Is there
a
sign that maybe...
Right. It's so strange because normally, if you go back a decade, we've seen corrections before. So having that 10% correction is not unusual. But what is unusual is in this most recent run of the market, it has been very prolonged, and we haven't seen as big a drop down. We've flirted with 10% down before, but we haven't gotten to the actual 10% mark. So a correction hasn't really happened. It's not a word in our vocabulary currently. Mm-hmm. So seeing that 10% drop down, it's not atypical. We've seen that in the past. And, we talk about it. It's actually healthy for the market to sell off. It means everything's rationalizing rational.
But it tends to bounce back quickly, is your point. It doesn't.
It tends to bounce back.
Yeah.
Now, this time, I would caution you and say just be prepared for volatility. And remember, there's a lot of emotion around the market. There's a lot of emotion around the price of oil. As oil dipped down below 30 today, that set off a whole new host of issues, because people look at that and it's kind of that's a panic number. Wait a minute, now it's below 30. What happened? Well, in reality, nothing changed since yesterday. It just takes a long time for the supply and demand of oil to correct. And so you're seeing that market, which always overreacts both on the up and the down when it comes to oil, overreacting on the down, and that's creating a little bit of fear, and that's spreading into the equity market as well.
Right. And the volatility index, which is that's an actual instrument. That's a product that is. So here in Chicago, invented right here in Chicago.
Right. That's right.
And it is, and it's traded on the CME. It is a it's interesting because it both is, I love it because it does tell you sort of where people are in the markets, and when things are good and rosy and you have just a day where the crickets are chirping and nothing else is happening, the people who went long on the VIX get screwed. But it also, it encourages, to some degree, I think that it encourages the drama a little bit, because now you're betting on drama.
It does. It does. It does encourage the drama a little bit, because now people have another instrument to trade that's all about. It's not really about businesses. It's not about the earnings power of a business. It's about fear. It's about how nervous can we make people feel about the market.
Yep.
And so in some ways, we're adding fuel to the fire, because we're putting a lot of instruments in, trading vehicles around the market, that then it becomes that vicious cycle where you get a little nervous and you think, oh, and someone says, oh, I better trade this VIX. And then someone else gets a little more nervous, and then it just compounds. So in a way, we do it to ourselves.
So when we're flirting with 10%, is it like, God, your eyes are beautiful? Is it like that kind of flirting, or is it, what kind of flirting with 10% down are we?
We're flirting. I would say we're pretty serious here on the flirting with 10%.
Are you touching the forearm? Are you touching the forearm and looking deeply into the eyes?
I think you're actually asking for a date here, because I think the 10% down is pretty concrete, and you know, we've certainly seen it from the ups to the down, since our high back in the fall.
Yeah.
Now to where we are here. However, I always caution the 10% down. This is why the VIX index jumped up 11% today. We are seeing that volatility in the market. But what was most interesting, and one of the reasons I'm here in New York at this conference, is to be able to meet with all of these business management teams and see what these companies are saying. And it's interesting, again, earnings are just starting to come out for the fourth quarter, so finishing up 2015, companies are coming out and telling us about that now. And all of these management teams are actually saying things are fairly stable. They're not great, but they're stable. And so they also are perplexed. And that gives me a little more confidence that, the underlying is still good, and particularly all the businesses that are focused in the U.S.
Right. Because you do have this. And yesterday we were talking about this Royal Bank of Scotland, pushing the sell button and telling other people to sell. It's going to be a cataclysmic year and all of that. I mean, the problem with that is that and not that Royal Bank of Scotland's got a great record on that, because they don't. But they might want to get new analysts. But this is a different. There's so many other factors now that are still legacy of 2008, because you do have high frequency trading, you do have cliffs to go off of, and you do have international. There's so much international liquidity, so much money that is traded between the euro and the renminbi, or whatever they want to call it, over in China.
And into the yen and into the dollar, and now we have a lot of that splashing around. And also, that money is not only going through currencies, but also changing markets. It's not just in the U.S. dollar, it's in U.S. stocks, S&P, and it's in the big indices, the S&P 500, the Dow Jones, the brand name. It's in the FTSE 100. So it's in the big European indices and the big U.S. indices. So when people start to get nervous, then it's easy to switch that money around.
Yeah.
And it's also easy to just say, oh, I'm out of it, or, oh, you know what, I'm switching continents. Mm-hmm.
It's sloppy, though, because the sense is that you can make something happen that shouldn't happen on paper. And like 2008, in some respects, although that should have probably happened on paper, but you can make at least I don't want to use the term flash crash, but I just used it. It's like things.
That's a terrible term. We hope that never happens again. But in fact, what we're doing is, and I know I use the word emotional a lot, but you're setting up a chain reaction where, humans are having this knee-jerk reaction to what's going on. You want to preserve capital. I don't know what's going on. Wait a minute. I'll pull my money out. There's a lot of volatility. That's not what we've had. I don't like it. I'll pull my money out. So these instruments and the way the market works now, the dynamics are very different than they were 10 years ago.
Right.
And as we, feel the impact of that emotionally, we're not ready for it.
Susie,
and so, again, the best investors take human emotion out of it and go on facts, because underlying value depends on the company's earnings, what the company owns, what it represents. If it has barriers to entry, it can control its markets. And none of that is an emotional decision. Like, oh, I really like their product. That's great.
Right.
No, their product makes a lot of money. I like their product because it makes a lot of money.
Well, there's a difference between rational and emotional and all that. We go back to irrational exuberance back, 15 years ago. We got to run here, but
in the short term, emotion takes over. So be careful.
Don't I know it? You are
every day around here
to the guy who invented the concept of that. All right, we will see you Friday. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Susie. See you Friday.
All right.
Susan Schmidt, Chief Financial Analyst for the Rocon Show with Anna DeVlantis, and now Chief Trafficologist, and that's what she is.